sono nata nel forno
del mondo.
Sir, good afternoon, my name is Vita Turco. I was born north of Africa, but actually I work in Treviso, very close to here, and I live in emergency, and in emergency medicine. Allow me just to congratulate Elio for the conference, the content of the conference, and to all the staff. So I'd like to refer back to what the colleague said yesterday about the issue of costs. I was not sponsored, and well, obviously, if you want to buy something very nice and expensive, well, probably it will be more expensive. Allow me to add something more regarding, again, what was said yesterday. Trade unions have always been involved in collective bargaining, not in training. Okay, having said that, allow me to return to today's presentations. I agree with what Angela has said, but are we actually, Angela Cardone, but are we really working with a view to making nurses more sensitive to pain issues? And a question for Patrizia, what can we do if there is no history taking because there is no interaction with the members of the family and the patient perhaps is not able to talk? And a question to Christina, the perception of pain by nurses and by patients, is it the same? John, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the physical activity you allowed us to perform yesterday against thrombosis and against decubitus sores. But in respect of your communication today, can we actually say that there is no pain in British hospitals? And if the statement is true, then what can we do to reach a level, as the Dutch colleague was saying yesterday? And then one question to our Spanish colleague, Amparo. Now, when a nurse analyzes pain, first of all, by history taking, and then by all the other procedures, is there a problem in the first approach to analyzing pain or not? Thank you. Well, thank you very much. Okay, please, quick replies, because we also want other participants to be able to ask questions.
Nel procedere.
Inizio a corrisponderti alla prima domanda.
So, first question. What do we nurses do for pain? Well, obviously, we must relate ourselves to the patients we care for, and I share what Amparo said at the beginning of her presentation when she said that freedom from pain means quality of care. Now, I agree entirely, 100% to what Amparo has said, and I think that this is the principle we should strive to apply to all institutions and hospitals, and this means that we should relate ourselves to individuals, to our patients, and to take them into account as individuals who have variables which sometimes are not standard, behavioral variable, cognitive, emotional variables. So we should be able to feel individual pain and not work based on our assessment of pain or even our biases on pain. We should really strive to relate ourselves to these individuals and to understand what these individuals need. So I think that the pain aspect is a multidimensional aspect, and so it needs greater effort from our side. It needs fundamental competencies which must be based on knowledge, on authoritative knowledge too, and also on interaction with other the professionals, even those who are more expert than we are, if need be. So I'm convinced that in every facility, in every hospital, it is possible to turn that facility into a pain-free facility. It is possible in the post-op context, it is perhaps more complex in a clinical setting, but it is possible. And to do so, it's important to monitor pain and to describe and report in writing the nursing assessment of pain. So we should take part, we should really be involved in pain assessment in order to be able to manage pain. And what John said was really thrilling. Nurses decide. There are protocols. If nurses that are properly trained and registered, they can decide in full autonomy. I agree with this entirely. We are also able to do much, and sometimes we underestimate, or everybody underestimates what we do. Actually, we can administer treatment without the presence of a colleague. We cannot prescribe treatment, obviously, but we can guide the prescription of treatment, and we can even assess the effects induced by administration of drugs. So I think this should be the object of our commitment. So, Patricia, as quickly as possible, please.
Beh, abbiamo visto durante l'esposizione del caso clinico.
So, during the presentation of our clinical case, I think that we have shown that we try to involve the patient's family as much as possible. And, well, initially, this is not problem-free. Because involving the family means that nurses have to educate the family in order to make it participate in the daily management of the patient's problems. And this is actually the point of the whole exercise. Allow me to make a further point. Now, we always talk about therapeutic alliance, and if we create this therapeutic alliance between care providers and family, then the family will not, as it were, infect the patient with the family's own anxiety and therefore increase the patient's anxiety. So the therapeutic alliance has its own value, and nurses can do a lot in that respect. Nurses can really relate to the family and the patient. They can seize the opportunities which are based on interaction and on the nurse's direction or guidance to interaction. Please, could you just repeat the question you addressed to me, because there was a series of questions and I'm not really sure that I understood what you meant.
Scusa, no, dicevo, la percezione del dolore vista
dall'istituto. The perception of pain, as seen by nurses, as assessed on a scale out of 10, does it really match the perception of pain as seen and felt by the patient? Well, as we have seen, there are scales to assess pain. What is absolutely sure is that nurses must be and remain sensitive. They must be aware. That is to say, nurses should never follow standard procedures, but they should always take into account the feelings, both the physical feelings, but also the emotional feelings of patients before they do anything. And it is quite clear that self-assessment is always the most realistic type of assessment. Now, I may myself decode a number of symptoms which I then evaluate, but self-assessment is fundamental, especially because the perception of pain is subjective. It cannot be standardized. It is not objective. Okay, thank you very much. I think we can now give the floor to John and then to Amparo for their replies.
Okay, just a couple of thoughts. There is much research that shows that nurses and patients' perceptions of pain are very, very different. To be a bit controversial, some research shows that if you're newly qualified, you're more sensitive to patients' pain, and you're more likely to give more pain control. Other research says that's nonsense. And the more experienced you are, the more sensitive. I don't think we know what the answer is. But one answer is clear. Every nurse has a duty, regardless of experience, to manage a patient's pain. There are many difficulties in assessing pain. And I think we made it sound that it's a simple activity, but as we've heard from my Italian colleagues, it's a very complex. It's influenced by many factors. And you need to know your patient very well to understand what their pain is. And let's remember that some patients, if you ask them directly, or have you got pain? I have no pain, but I have a dullness, an ache. So sometimes we need to use the language that the patients use themselves. Pain is a very broad term. I think that's another thing we need to think about. The other thing I would like to add is that pain assessment tools like the VAS scales or numerical rating scales are one-dimensional. And that is why I prefer to use a more comprehensive tool which involves a PQRST, because it gives you a broader understanding than just measuring pain. Finally, English hospitals are not perfect. About 5 years ago, there was many reports saying that the pain services in hospitals was poor. And subsequently, there was a big rethink and pain care teams were developed. And the research shows that where those exist, quality is improved. But by no means all hospitals have pain assessment tools, pain teams. I hope that answers your question.
Grazie, John. Amparo.
Thank you, John. Amparo.
When a nurse is analyzing pain in Spain, we usually carry on a protocol. In this way, we analyze pain at first time when the patient is coming to us. After that, we carry on analyzing pain through the patient's stay at the ICU. I said in advance every 1 hour, every 2 or every 4 hours, depending on the patient's pathology or on the patient's consciousness of pain, because as every member of the table spoke, patient's pain is has a subjective component. In this way, our problem was in Spain, what happens after ICU discharge. To carry on the control of the pain in the ward, in a non-ICU ward, is due in some hospitals, but care pain teams. They are made by doctors and nurses, and also physiotherapists. But not every hospital has a care pain team. In this way, when a patient is discharged from the ICU, is his own doctor who carries on the control of the pain. And when a patient is discharged from the hospital to home, is the primary attention who takes care about the pain. But a lot of patients, hospital that has a care pain team and works in a good way, they take care for patients when they are at the hospital, and also patients that are discharged from the hospital.
Okay, grazie. Interventi, prego.
Okay, thank you very much.
Enrico.
Good morning, my name is Enrico from Florence Emergency Department. I'd like to thank all the speakers of this morning session for the relevance of the issues which have been discussed. I've got two questions, one to all speakers. Have you any experience in using scales, the formal instruments for the assessment of pain in patients with an impairment in the state of consciousness, with a compromised state of consciousness? This is a very delicate topic. There are many studies telling us that patients with a reduced state of consciousness are more at risk for being undertreated. Second question for foreign speakers as to non-pharmacological techniques or methods. All nurses have the right skills and competencies to implement these methods, information, welcoming the patient. Other techniques such as hypnosis, relaxation, music therapy are not included in our basic skills. So in your respective countries, how are nurses trained on these complementary techniques? And how many nurses use these methods to treat pain? A second question? My name is Daniela Laurenti. I work in a neurosurgery ICU in Rome. I'd just like to refer to a situation that I hope it's only typical of Rome. In our ICU, we never used pain scales. It is true that we see many comatose or coma patients. They are sedated, but also upon awakening, many patients are in pain. They are trauma patients with a spinal lesion, but we never use pain assessment scales. There's no culture for those instruments. We work empirically. And very often, opiates are not given because this is linked to our Catholic culture. Pain is there because the patient has sinned. We rarely give morphine. In brain aneurysms in the past, pain peaks had to be avoided. So morphine was given for those patients, but now morphine is no longer given. Similar drugs are used, but they do not relieve pain very well. So the patient is always in pain. And it's very difficult to manage those patients because they become aggressive. It's difficult to communicate with them. And then I was pleased to hear that in the UK, nurses are more autonomous in this respect. They can give painkillers. Well, in Italy, painkillers cannot be prescribed by nurses. Not even together with the doctor. I mean, we could organize briefings with doctors in the morning to decide to which patients painkillers should be given. But this is not possible in Italy. We do not do that. So why is it so? What should we do to reach the same objectives already reached by our foreign colleagues? I don't see any other questions. So we could start answering the first question. I would like to say something as to the patient who's intubated, who's not conscious. how to manage pain without using scales. Well, this morning we referred to the use of scales in conscious patients, but in the beginning the patient was not cooperative, so we did not perform, we did not administer the scale, but the nurse managed to assess the patient thanks to his experience, to the nurse's experience. And when the patient is intubated, an expert nurse in the ICU is able to identify some factors which are useful, such as the impairment of vital signs, a sudden increase in the heart rate, or facial expressions by the patient. Well, these are useful indicators to understand that the pain is there. So it's possible to talk to the doctor and cooperate with the doctor to change the treatment. And so all lies in the nurse's experience. I'd like to say something as to Enrico's question. Underestimating or neglecting pain in unconscious patients, or also in the case of some procedures which are carried out, and sometimes we tend to forget pain. Agnarti carried out a study some years ago, and it was illustrated in the Genoa conference. And results showed that pain is often underestimated during tracheal aspiration, for instance, or blood sampling, arterial blood sampling. So pain is underestimated during routine practices because the patient is sedated, or there's a coma patient, or the patient is not conscious. But the studies clearly showed that healthcare staff tend to underestimate pain. So it is true that we haven't got the proper instrument to assess those patients. For those patients, we should monitor vital signs, we should directly observe their facial or bodily expressions. It's the only way, I think. Amparo or John, who would like to react or answer both questions?
A lot of experience using the scales, principally the Ramsay scales for unconscious patients. Why? Because we need to have an instrument to measure pain. Pain has this subjective component, and it's very difficult to measure pain or to achieve an exact number. But we have to cope with this, and our way to cope with it is to use scales every day. Scales go in graphs, paper graphs, and also informatic graphs. In this way, the nurse have know that it's necessary to measure pain, or to look at the patient. Looking the patient, looking face, movement, we can also find if the patient, the unconscious patient, has pain. I think it's a good way to measure pain and control it.
I think we would all agree that assessing pain in a patient who is unconscious is problematic. And as my colleagues on the table have said, you can use blood pressure, changes in heart rate, but there are other things which we sometimes don't consider. A reaction to a painful stimuli. There's much research that says suctioning is one of the most painful things that can happen to ventilated patients. And if you're doing that too early, you can be sure the patient's suffering. He may not tell you, but it does cause pain. turning the patient who's ventilated is also painful. And certainly in the UK, it is a standard practice to have pain control and sedation as routines. We must also be mindful that we are living in an era of evidence-based practice, and also in an era of consumer empowerment. Relatives know what's going on, and if you don't document and you cannot have evidence that you have recorded pain assessment, you're going to be in big trouble. So I think it's important that pain is assessed, because if you don't assess it, you can't make a plan. There was a question to me about non-pharmacological methods. Certainly in the United Kingdom, if you're using therapeutic massage or guided imagery, you must have completed a course and must have a certificate that is recognized by the authorities of being competent professional in therapeutic massage or guided imagery. Not every nurse can do it. As for music therapy, anybody, any nurse can speak to a patient and say, do you like boogie-woogie? Do you like rock and roll? Classical music? You put the headphones, you listen. But music therapy must be used carefully and appropriately.
Rispondono anche alle altre domande.
I'm going to answer the second question. It's true, I agree. We don't have any special training on non-pharmacological technique. But in the, as John said, massage and relaxing techniques are made by physiotherapists. Every morning, or in, depending on each hospital, also every afternoon, physiotherapists go to the ICU and make exercises and massage to the patients. And also physiotherapists teach the nurse how to do it, how she can make to do it, because at night time physiotherapists aren't in a Spanish hospital. It's not a good way to learn it, but it's the only that I have at the moment. And on the other side, when we speak about music therapy or all the kind of relaxing techniques, we can ask psychologists at the university. Usually Spanish university collaborate a lot with hospitals. They make us courses, and also they come with us to the ICU and teach what to do a determined thing. And in case of music therapy, the only thing we do is to put the earphones, and when patient, yes, it's true, and when patient can explain what kind of music he or she likes, we ask the family. It's the only thing that I can do. Thanks.
John?
And there was just one more comment that was made about nurses prescribing. And again, we have a problem with junior doctors in the UK. And as a result, we now have courses that allow nurses to become prescribing. They have to do one module of theory and one module of practice to become a nurse prescriber. But you have a range of drugs that you must follow according to a protocol. You cannot prescribe anything. There is a good range, but it doesn't mean you can prescribe all drugs.
Okay, grazie. Mi pare che c'era.
Thank you. Maybe Cristina would like to add something. I would like to make two quick remarks. I was really stimulated by John's presentation. John said that pain is expressed differently by different peoples. He referred to the British being stoic. And following this remark, I would like to say that Italy, but also Europe, and this is an international process, so well, in Italy we got to work with patients who are not able to speak Italian. And this problem has to be tackled. As a pediatric nurse, I may say that we got some advantages because we are used to decoding non-verbal language, because we've got pediatric patients. Very often children, when they're very young, they're not able to verbalize pain, so we're really used to decoding other signs and signals. But it is also true that now in Italy we've got many patients who cannot speak Italian. People who have a different culture. They come from a foreign country, they have a different culture, they express pain in a different way, and they also verbalize pain in a different way. Because adult patients express their pain by voicing it, by verbalizing it, but this depends on culture and experience. Then my second remark is related to the last participant who asked the question, the last question, yeah. I think that in Italy we're taking steps forward because these issues are being discussed both by nurses and doctors. Until 5-6 years ago, nobody spoke about this. Nobody spoke about pain. Now, pain is widely discussed by doctors and nurses. We're really talking about it, and this is a major progress. There's still a long way to go. This is true. But I think we're following the right path. And then I would like to make another remark, because the nurse is the person who's in contact with the patient. The nurse is with the patient all the time. The nurse is the health care professional spending more time with the patient. So that's why doctors tend to neglect pain, because they spend less time with the patient, but nurses, who spend most of the time with the patient, must be a stimulus, a driving force, and must stimulate doctors so that they cope better with pain control. Thank you, Christina. The message you have just launched is very important. As nurses, we must be aware of the fact that we've got the necessary skills to solve some problems. Pediatric nurses have developed some specific skills to treat patients who are not able to express their pain. And they are available to speak to you, to teach you. And pain is so important to all of us. We are individuals, and treating pain is fundamental to restore our balance. And now we are trying to find solutions for these daily problems, problems which have been solved, for instance, by pediatric nurses, because they are used to establishing relationships with children, with newborns, with subjects who are not able to voice their pain. So it's important to reflect on this issue, both today and tomorrow morning. I see that there's somebody else who would like to ask a question. Just one second. John would like to say something.
I think our last speaker made some really poignant statements. We are, as I said yesterday, we're all living in a multicultural society. And the pain tools that we use from one community may not always work for people from a different community. But we also have to think of the patients with dementia, hard of hearing, the visually impaired. A VAS will not be helpful to someone who is blind or someone who is deaf. So there's plenty of need for more research using pain tools for different types of patients with different conditions. And it's quite true. In the UK, I've done much research around the notion of chest pain. And some patients cannot articulate their symptoms. And sometimes they can choreograph their feelings through their hands, like a tightness or a stabbing pain. And sometimes I think as nurses, we need to look beyond what the patient says and watch how they're using their hands, because hands can often describe a lot more than words can. In addition to verbalizing, not only we know that different cultures, but some research I also did, I looked at what men and women said when reporting their cardiac symptoms. And there are differences in the choice of words that women will use whilst having a myocardial infarction. Women will use more qualitative words like frightening, terrifying, suffocating, whereas men will use more sensory words and occasionally will use qualitative words like terrifying. So not only do different cultures verbalize their symptoms, but there are differences sometimes between women and men with the same condition, and we must be attuned to that as well.
Grazie a John per questa integrazione e alla collega.
Thank you, John, very much for your comments, and thank you to our colleague who has been patient. I come from Sardinia, Alghero, and I work in an anesthesiology department. I'd like to thank John for his presentation, and I would like to say something about our experience in Alghero, Sardinia. We follow a pain control protocol which is similar to yours in post-surgery patients after hip replacement. We follow more or less your protocol, but timing, what is the timing? Because we use epidural infusion with morphine and an anti-emetic drug for 48 hours. Did you refer to 72 hours instead? Do you think that 48 hours is enough or not? Thank you, John. Other questions? Good morning. My name is Francesca Bortoli. I work in Gorizia in an ICU, and I also work in the field of pain management. And I'd like to react to something that has been said before. In our hospital, for some years, we have been assessing pain. And I think our hospital has been one of the first hospitals in our region to introduce pain-killing treatment. As nurses, we are very autonomous in assessing pain. In our world, we do not use pain assessment scales, but in the past few years we have been working hard on assessing pain, and I think we have developed good competencies, and I have to say that our doctors do the same. We organize a briefing, and together with the doctor we decide what kind of painkiller should be given to the patient during the day. So we assess the patient's pain and then we are free to administer drugs, pain-killing drugs, after consultation with the doctor. So I think we have achieved a very good level in managing pain. And as far as I know, I think that our experience in Italy is considered as a good one. Thank you. One more question? No? John is preparing his answer, and while he's doing so, I'd like to refer to something which has been raised by the last speaker. The administration as needed. I think we should talk about this, because this is a bit different from what we are used to. We know that, for instance, surgery generates pain, so we don't have to wait for the patient to tell me, I'm dying for pain. Then you have got to find a doctor, look for him, then wait more or less an hour before the doctor is available to speak to the nurse, and then maybe the doctor advises a drug which is not the best one because he has not seen the patient. So I'm being a little bit extreme, but we've got to reflect on treatment as needed. And this is maybe a treatment which is necessary after trying to prevent and to cover pain in all the possible situations. We know that a surgical patient will feel pain, so it's better to prevent him from feeling pain after surgery. I don't know whether you want to make some comments on this issue. Who would like to answer, John?
I should have said that epidurals are used up to 72 hours. As a type of patient, I was thinking would be in a critical care area or intensive care. An orthopedic patient probably would use or may require an epidural for less hours. I hope that answers your question.
Sì.
Forse mi sono espressa male, scusi.
We do administer painkillers as needed. I'm reacting to what Elio said, but we have a pain-killing coverage for the whole day, and then intubated and ventilated patients are sedated during our procedures, because otherwise they suffer. So I wanted to say this as to what Elio said about treatment, pain treatment as needed.
John stava rispondendo all'intervento della.
Yes, but John was answering not your question, but the question made by the colleague from Sardinia. But now Amparo would like to say something.
When Elio speak about prevent pain, for example, in Spain, when a patient comes from the theater to the ICU, the patient comes sleeping because she or he is under the anesthetic treatment. In this way, we don't know if the patient has pain or not, but we start with the protocol with morphine or remifentanil. We start administering opiates in order to avoid this pain that patient can say about it. And after that, when the patient recovers consciousness, we reduce step by step the analgesic and the sedative product in order to awake him in 6, 5, 10 hours, depending on the pathology and depending on the surgery made. We use preventive analgesic techniques.
would you like to I have a question for John. We're talking about nurses prescribing painkillers. But if I got it right, you said that when nurses fetch opiates and administer them, they have to be together. They've got to be in two, in pairs. Did I get it right? We're talking about nurses giving drugs, okay, painkillers, opiates. But you told us that there had to be two nurses together to fetch opiates and administer opiates. Why is it so, and what is the motivation, and in which circumstances there have to be two nurses to administer opiates?
I think this is a very, very old practice, and it's a way where you're trying to safeguard the public and safeguard staff. There's many examples in the UK where nurses have had drug problems in the past or have stolen drugs for sale. By having two registered nurses, you're trying to reduce that problem. And there's also been incidents where the wrong patient was given the wrong dose of opiates. So the strategy is that by having two registered nurses present, you're trying to eliminate error, reduce risk. And there's a very old historical practice. There are other drugs, non-opiates, antibiotics, can be given by the one nurse, just checking one nurse. But this is just specific to opiates.
Sono degli altri interventi?
Any other comments? Good morning. I come from the area of Treviso. I am a nurse and I would like to ask something. Very often doctors do not prescribe painkilling treatments. Very often patients are in pain. So it is very appropriate to alleviate their pain, but very often doctors are not ready to cooperate. They tell us, wait, the patient has got to withstand his pain, to cope with his pain. This is not urgent. So how can we react to this situation? How can we solve this problem? What is the power of nurses when doctors are not ready to prescribe painkillers? What can we do? And then something else. Intubated patients, and I do not work in an ICU, but in a semi-intensive treatment unit. And intubated patients are not sedated. They are we apply physical retention. Well, I think that what you said is really concerning. It's a problem of civilization. I would like to go back to what John said before. And our colleagues always mentioned the same thing in their slides. We're talking about a code of conduct. We're talking about ethics. John referred to this in the beginning of his presentation. So, there are very bad situations where pain management strategies do not exist. I mean, in Italy, a decree, a law has been adopted to encourage doctors to alleviate pain. But this should not discourage us, because we are equally accountable for this situation. Because we've got to raise the problem, we've got to discuss it, and together with doctors we've got to find a solution. We are not here to replace doctors. They've got their own duties. But we've got professional principles, we've got a code of conduct, we've got ethical principles. If we want to deliver advocacy, we have got the duty to alleviate pain, and this is clearly stated by our code of conduct. So the issue is not to prescribe painkillers. The issue is not to replace doctors. The issue is not to take on responsibilities that are not ours. I think the issue is to work with other healthcare professionals and with authorities and institutions to find a solution for patients' problems. And we've got to raise awareness. We've got to establish a relationship with people, with citizens, because we are professionals, but our life does not only take place inside the hospital. We've got our own life, and we've got to stimulate a reflection on this issue. People are still suffering. Patients are often in pain because healthcare professionals are neglecting that pain. And if a professional group does not raise this problem, and if a professional group does not decide to work on this issue, well, this professional group is not complying with its priority mission. Very often we tend to underestimate one specific aspect. If nurses are not ready to make these problems emerge in our society, who else can do so? As Christina told us, nurses are together with patients all day long. In ICUs, which are really closed to the outside world, and nurses are the ones who see what happens, these tragic situations which are not acceptable, and we've got to comply with our mission, we've got to comply with our code of conduct, and we've got to stimulate other medical professions to solve this problem. This problem can be solved by working together. If we're ready to do so, also the other professionals must be ready to do the same, and we've got to use our power, our leverage, so that other healthcare professions are ready to serve patients. We're here to serve patients and not doctors.
Comments to add, Duilio's profound words. Pain control is often difficult, and I think in your unit you could work together and form an alliance with medical staff, maybe one or two. It is important to write protocols, benchmarks, and minimal standards. And I think if you could identify in your unit what best practice is, then you have a benchmark. If a doctor chooses not to write the drugs, you must document this in your notes. It's only by doing sometimes radical actions that change happens. If you use conventional approaches, sometimes the doctors will say, no, no. As soon as you threaten to document that they have broken the standards, sometimes actions do happen. But as nurses, we are a collective. We are a big body, and we must work together as in collaboration and support each other to make change happen.
Grazie. Mi pare che c'è ancora un intervento. Molto
rapido. Sì,
thank you very much. A very quick question. Professor Brambilla mi guarda, general intensive care unit. We all often have polytrauma patients, burn patients, and other patients. So, in addition to the Ramsey scale, are there other scales which take into account what we are unable to assess when the patient is unconscious? I don't know, the burnt patient, for instance, who is burnt on the face, and so we cannot check the facial expression. Trauma patients who are immobilized, so we cannot assess their posture. So, can we actually, to a certain extent, I don't know, standardize the assessment of vital parameters and other parameters which can be assessed when the patient is unconscious? And then, can we also assess other elements of discomfort in addition to pain? Dyspnea, which means that you feel you're choking, or even the feeling some patients have that nursing maneuvers or medical maneuvers are really an aggression, a physical aggression against themselves. How can we assess this?
C'è un'altra domanda, prendiamo.
There's another question. Orietta Curadini from Terni. I work in a resuscitation service, and I'm also a member of a group which studies pain. Now, unfortunately, I do realize that in our situation, pain is quite well controlled in intensive care units. However, in the ward, it is extremely difficult to control pain. Why? Well, because both nurses are not sensitive enough, and this is due perhaps to the variability of their workload, but also because doctors tend to be not as sensitive as they should in respect of pain. I mean, doctors really tend to be less sensitive to pain issues. So I would really be happy if I were able to leave this room with a single protocol, a single standard or whatever, which I could apply in all intensive care settings, wherever I were throughout Italy. Okay, thank you very much. Well, I think that we already have many tools which go in the direction you suggest, but actually I'm convinced that the human factor is crucial here, that is to say, the willingness of individuals to take into account this very serious problem and to act on it. Now, I'm convinced that there are many tools which we may find also in the internet, and as our colleague from Gorizia has just said, there are many Italian hospitals which are adopting systematically in all services these tools and these methods. I have the impression that what is really missing is the individual and cultural sensitivity which will enable people to go in that direction.
Comment that was made earlier on relating to physical restraint. British Association of Critical Care Nurses, in recognition of the problems around physical restraint, has just launched a position statement which is available on the BACCM website, free to download, and it talks about physical, chemical restraint and whether they should be used, and has provided guidelines for best practice.
Il documento a cui faceva riferimento John adesso.
So as John has said, this is downloadable directly from the website of the British Association, and you'll find a link to the British website on our own homepage, in our own Aniarti website homepage, so it's very easy to access this bridge site. Now, I'd like to invite you all to visit the Aniarti point, where you'll find colleagues who will be more than willing to give you information about Aniarti, and where you may become a member of Aniarti or renew your membership for next year with a reduced membership fee. You'll also find additional information, instruments. You may also find people with whom you may talk within the Aniarti point about, points of interest to you, or the ways in which you may contribute to Aniarti, and so on and so forth. So I can't summarize all that you may find at the Aniarti point, but I'd really like to insist that you visit Aniarti point and you find there an opportunity for yourselves and other colleagues to become members of Aniarti. Okay, I'd like to thank you all and all the colleagues. Please leave the room so that you can be checked out for credits, and we resume at 2:30. Thank you very much.